Finding a pathway to survival after suffering great tragedy on Dave Kinchin Tonight. It's the topic we're focused on in a remastered version of this show. We originally restarted the show back in March of 2019, so really just a couple of months ago, after almost 10 years away. And back in the early days, we were a live call-in show. When we returned to the airwaves, so to speak, we were a live call-in slash internet radio show, and we started the show with a great guest, Patience Carter, who is the author of the upcoming book, Survive Then Thrive, and also outreach director for the Gun Violence Survivors Foundation. She's based in Florida. She is a survivor of the 2016 Pulse nightclub massacre. She was shot. She lost a person with her that day who was the youngest victim in the attack, Akira Murray. We have talked with her extensively in Philadelphia News, and she was really featured around the world after she read a poem from the hospital she was staying in, talking about what she had experienced when it was raw at that moment. She still lives with the nightmares, but she has come such a long way, and you're going to hear from her as she talks about that harrowing ordeal and how she's doing now and how she's counseling other survivors too. Now, what you're going to hear is an interview that was recorded live in a call-in, what was essentially a community call format. So think of it was like a conference call type of format, but live in internet radio form. So that comes with some of it'll sound different because it was essentially a phone call. And that certainly, when you're dealing with a long distance call, it's going to, just like Skype, you're going to have some of the technical matters that go along with that. But it's, her interview is incredibly insightful, and we wanted to share that with you again on this show. So without further ado, we will begin the program after these words. You know, we say it often because it is true. Music brings everybody together, and we celebrate that and more on Rock of Nations with Dave Kinchin, celebrating all things rock and roll, a podcast talking about the Stones and the Beatles, or if you like the heavier stuff like Zeppelin and Sabbath, we talk about them and everybody in between as well. There's interviews, there's insight, and there's fun vignettes that honor some of the greatest songs of all time. We are on Spotify, we are on iTunes, and if we are not where you should be getting podcasts, we will write a protest song about it. Tune in.
You had gone to Orlando. It was your friend's graduation. Actually, your friend had just gotten a basketball scholarship, right? Tell us about her and just kind of tell us about all of that.
Yeah, so Akira Murray, at the time she was 18 years old. It was a lot going on for her in 2016. So she just graduated from high school. She was headed to Mercyhurst University on a full scholarship for basketball. And she also reached this 1,000-point record for her school. And everything was just, you know, looking up. Everybody was excited for her future. It was an exciting time for her. So the purpose of vacation was to not only have family time and, you know, have this bonding experience, but it was supposed to be a celebration for her and all of her accomplishments.
And so you go, you're looking for a club, right? And you're going to have some fun. It's I think it was a weekend, correct? And you find Pulse nightclub, correct?
Yeah, so it's just really unfortunate the way that it all happened, because it was just by chance that we picked Pulse, and that was the first club to come up. The good reviews and the pictures, everything was so enticing about it. That's what made us want to check it out and go there. And it was only $10 to get in, so it was like, this is perfect, you know. We're all underage, so we need a place that, you know, is for people who are underage. And it just happened to be that club. We could have went anywhere else. And it's just really unfortunate that that's how it had to happen.
So you go there, and everything was fine for most of the night, right? I mean, everything seemed to be from, I was reading back some notes of, I think just news stories and what witnesses had said at the time, and everything was pretty normal until the end, when all of a sudden you heard gunshots. Tell us, kind of paint the picture from there.
Like I said on the clip, it was literally like the best night ever. So
yeah.
Imagine having the time of your life up until literally the last few moments when you're about to leave and go home. You're just waiting for your Uber, and that's when we started hearing the gunshots go off in the club. And at that point, everybody just started going everywhere. It was chaotic. It was crazy because nobody was prepared for that. Everybody was having the night of their life, you know? So I dropped to the floor. I see people scurrying around, running back and forth. And Kiara, she ran towards the bar. And Akira, she's just, like, pivoting back and forth in between, is not really sure which way to go. And everything happened so fast, but I ended up getting outside. And I didn't even know that I was outside until Akira came over to me and I looked up and I saw this guy behind her hair. And I was like, where's Sierra? You know, at that point I realized that we were outside. So now it's like, where's the other friend at? So we can get out of here, but she was still inside. So we had to go back inside, and she was there by the bar. She was in complete shock, and she didn't come out of that until she saw us. And when that happened, we saw everybody running into the bathrooms. Like, so we didn't even think to go back out the door. And at the time, like, when you're trying to figure out everything, you're not really thinking clearly with clear competency. So it's just like we just followed everyone into the bathrooms when who knows what the outcome would have been if we would have went out the door.
Then it was in the bathroom when, you know, everything just continued and must have gotten even more terrifying.
Terrifying is definitely an understatement. I feel like there's no word to describe the level of fear and terror, really, that went on in the bathroom, because we heard the shooter shooting, like, people and screaming and crying and groaning and begging, and we're still trying to process what's going on at the same time. And then all of a sudden you hear footsteps enter, you know, this one place that you pray is safety, and so it's not, you know. So being completely vulnerable in that situation was beyond terrifying, because I'm not even, you know, I feel like I wasn't even supposed to be here. It was just like by the grace of a higher power that I'm even here, because everybody was exposed to the endless bullets that he was firing at us. Imagine, like, we were literally in the corner and he was just shooting at us. So I don't even know how to describe the level of fear that I had, but it was definitely terrifying.
And I know you were there tragically when Akira Murray was shot and did not survive, right? I mean, tell me about, I remember covering the celebration of life for her, and just there were so many people who were obviously in shock. I mean, just complete disbelief. I mean, the place was filled, you know, even outside with friends and family. And just tell us about, you know, who she was and how do you remember her?
Yeah, so Akira was someone that I was actually starting to get to know. And I talk about this, like, in my book, about how the trip itself was going to be an opportunity for me to get closer to Sierra's family overall, because I hadn't had the opportunity to yet. So Akira... and I, leading up to the trip, started to spend more time together, going to get our nails done, which was shocking to me, because as an athlete, I didn't even know that she liked getting her nails done until, like, the trip. So it was just, I was learning things about her as the trip got closer, and I realized, like, wow, this is going to be fun. This is going to be cool. She's super funny. Like, and she was the type of funny you didn't expect her, like, to be funny, because sometimes she was, like, really, like, shy, and all of a sudden she'd turn into, like, the life of the party. So it was, like, it was cool to see her personality really like unravel, you know, and her opening up to me a little bit more. I just talk about this in the book, like you never know when you're gonna have like your last opportunity to get to know someone. And it sucks. Like it really, really does suck that we were just starting to really develop this friendship and it was just stolen, like in a blink of an eye, so.
And when, and obviously you had this emotional moment, but you had your, I mean, everything going on emotionally. Obviously, no words to, I can, I mean, you've described it so incredibly, you know, incredibly well, and yet you have your own injury too. You were shot multiple times, and tell me about your injuries and what you were feeling physically and emotionally yourself relating to your own injury.
So physically, I suffered two gunshot wounds, and the bullet that entered my right thigh shattered my femur bone. It's like this really technical word for like a dismal like fracture, but it was shattered. So when I looked at the X-ray when I got to the hospital, like and came to consciousness, and the doctors explained to me the gravity of the injury, it was like mind-blowing. And the best way I could describe it was like looking at a broken Christmas ornament. Like there was like fragments of bone everywhere. And they had to put this metal rod in my thigh, screws. So basically, I feel like a robot. But just like the physical, like pain had to take its course, so did the emotional pain. There was a lot of emotional stuff that I had to work through, honestly, these past 2 years. Going on 3 years since the shooting happened. And honestly, I feel like the emotional pain lingered a lot longer than the physical pain. It took maybe like in total like 8 months for me to walk more confidently. And I was able to walk without my crutches when I was going back to school in New York, but it was a very long emotional journey because I was so used to being strong, independent, and not needing anybody for anything. So it was like this long period of time when I had to depend on everybody for every single thing. And just feeling completely vulnerable all over again, like that vulnerability of being in the bathroom and just hoping that someone comes to save you. Like I just hated feeling so dependent. And after I got over that, like, internal conflict that I was having with myself and focused on being more positive and focusing my energy on healing, not only physically but emotionally from the event that happened, that's when my life really started to change for me, like just personally. I share a lot of things on social media, but there's so much more that I went through emotionally that I do talk about in my book and I do open up a little bit more, but it's just I was dealing with so much outside of the post shooting during that time that I was just focusing my energy on so many other things. Like it's crazy, but I'm here now, so that's the most
Because
important.
you're absolutely, yeah, and I want to ask you too, you know, writing the book, I mean, was this something that was, you know, sometimes people say writing a book can be therapeutic, but was it like, can you describe sort of just the process of how you wrote this book, how you, you know, presented everything, you know, but did it given what I'm sure would come back up emotionally, and you know, because you said you open up more in the book, but there must have been so much that made it hard to even write it too. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, there was times when writing the book was a little distressing for me than it was therapeutic because I would get to certain parts where I'm literally reliving the incident and I have to think deeply and put myself back into the moment so I can describe it and narrate it in a way that readers can understand the level of fear that I had in those like key moments. But the purpose isn't to re-traumatize, wasn't to re-traumatize myself or to traumatize anybody else from being a witness of what I went through. It's just to show the journey and show how strong, you know, I had to be to get through that. and how strong others can be as well to get through whatever it is that they're going through. But it was many times when I just had to take a break. I just had to take a break from writing. But it started from one long account that I wrote shortly after the shooting happened. So I was back in New York. It was still 2016. I just went back to school. And I just decided to write this long account of what happened, just for my own recollection, just so I just knew from beginning to end what happened, just in case later down the line I might forget something. So it just started from there. It was just one long account. And then as time went on, just living and experiencing and seeing how much my story was inspiring so many people, and the poem, and realizing that there was strength in my words, and knowing that I had so much more to do, and that I'm basically not supposed to be here. So the fact that I am is, like, super amazing, and why should I waste this one, you know, this basically second chance at life on and not do something inspirational for other people? So then I thought, okay, how can I use my words? And I just wanted to create something that could inspire. And the only thing I know how to do for sure is write.
I was going to say you were studying, you know, to be a journalist. You were working in journalism. You were going to tell stories, and I'm sure never imagined that you'd be telling the most important story of ever, which would be yours.
Yeah, never. I would have never thought. And being at Fox 29 News, like in, you know, the entire space, like it was a cool space to be in, seeing how the news comes together and stories are created and, you know, how content is put together and put out to the public. I never thought that I would be, like, a part of the messages that were going out. So I started to realize how important having something to say actually is. So I really wanted to have something to say. So I just took a lot of time.
When you were, okay,
yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, I really wanted to take the time to think about what I wanted to say, what kind of message I wanted to have, how I wanted to impact the world with my words, instead of just, you know, it being about this horrible, horrible, tragic situation that happened. I wanted to be able to inspire and pull something out of it that wasn't so, you know, traumatizing for the person that's actually listening. So,
have you heard from people since, I mean, the book's not out yet, I know, but have you, you know, in the days, you must have been overwhelmed with communication, I'm sure, in the days after, right, through social media and everything, but what was it like when you heard from people who were inspired? I mean, they weren't just, they were praying for you, they were pulling for you, but also, you know, when people started telling you how, over time, you know, how inspired they were by you, what was that like?
Honestly, hearing people and seeing people writing me messages about how much they were inspired by my story was therapeutic in itself. Mm. Having people send me so much love and encouragement and just knowing that there's somebody rooting for me and knowing that because of how I'm handling my journey, that others feel empowered to push through in their journey. That was therapeutic in itself. It was, and it's not just like I felt really good, I felt really happy to see it. It was really therapeutic knowing that there's people out there who felt encouraged by everything that I was doing. That was therapeutic in itself. So I felt extremely inspired myself. Seeing that energy, seeing that response, it helped me keep going because now I knew that I was fighting not only for myself but for other people who are fighting on their own journeys. So, yeah, having that experience was therapeutic in itself. I'll say it again.
And are you're doing that with the Gun Violence Survivors Foundation, right? You're working with people who have been on their own journey after dealing with trauma, correct? I mean, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the primary role that I have with the Gun Violence Survivors Foundation is connecting survivors who send in requests and explain their stories to the proper resources. And resources I can't imagine going through the situation that I went through, not having any support, not having any help. And I was blessed to have an outpouring, network and support system to get me through the situation, and therapy, whenever I needed therapy, it was there, or whenever I needed financial assistance, it was there. But there's so many people who are dealing with gun violence every single day who are losing, the fathers, brothers, like these key pillars in their families, and they don't have any support. So that's really what my position is to connect these people with those resources. And Christopher Hayes, the founder, he was really the one that reached out to me and said, hey, like, I see what you're doing. I see what you're trying to do, and I want to bring you on board. But there's so much more that we have in store for the rest of this year and next year. It's really still kind of like in the beginning stages, but we do get responses from people, and we are able to assist, help those people get to the resources they need. But it's just like right now, running a foundation it's very, very challenging, especially in the space where you have so much responsibility on you to make sure that you're not just having this position. I don't even know. But you know what I mean? Like, just actually mm-hmm. making a difference. So I'm just looking forward to making more of a difference and utilizing. Okay. Yeah.
Do you think that part of it is that very few people, other than, of course, yourself and the survivors you work with, understand the magnitude of something like that? Or is that even fair to say? Like, do you feel like there's there's that type of bond that, while people on the outside can understand and process what you're doing, it's different for people like yourself and people who have been victimized or faced such incredible trauma?
I don't think that most people understand the gravity of being a survivor of trauma to this magnitude, I would say, as far as like mass shootings and these national tragedies. That's something that it's so complex. There's so many pieces and facets of it that are just going to linger with you for a really, really long time. And honestly, you can't help anybody if you're struggling inside. So I had to really take time to heal as well, before I could be this
sure.
this inspiration and this person that's helping all these other people. I actually had to heal too. So and that's another thing. Like, you have to take the time to take care of yourself before you can even be, a support for anybody else. There's a limited group that really does understand the magnitude. And then there's, like, so many other traumas. Like, people are traumatized every single day. And you don't even have to be the person involved in a traumatic event to be traumatized. So it's just all these people hurting in different ways and harboring all this pain that you don't even really know where to begin. So it's just, it's huge, and I think we do need more people to speak out and share their stories and explain how they're overcoming what they're going through, because there's people traumatized every single day, every single day.
When you see the news and, like Parkland, that was a year ago, and mm-hmm. hard to believe a year ago, when you see the news and you see of another mass shooting or another mass, tragic event, do you feel that again, what you went through?
It's not a moment where I'm living anything myself. It's just I immediately sympathize with everyone involved, because I just know from my experience that it's going to be a long road, like, after. I'm already thinking about their tomorrow. The first day, everybody chaotic, don't know what's really going on, and then the next day it settles in that either you survive and you have to deal with that survivor's guilt, or either you lost somebody and you have to deal with that grief and you have to start processing that loss. That's the day that hurts. I think about their day after, and it just, I just sympathize. I feel so bad for them because I'm just like, if you could prevent it, you don't want anybody to have to go through that level of pain, especially the Parkland, their kids, students. So I would never wish anybody have to experience that, but I automatically think about their day after and just know that it's going to be super, super hard.
I'm just trying to think, you know, when you processed everything yourself, there's so many different levels to it, I imagine, like so many different areas. You mentioned survivor's guilt. Can I just ask you a little bit about that? I mean, you know, how, you know, intense you felt that and how you responded to it. Again, I'm trying to be sensitive because I know it's hard to go back to all of that. But, I mean, if that's okay to ask, again, I'm trying, you know, I don't, you know, I want to make sure you're, you know, you feel the most comfortable as you can in you know, talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The first few days being in the hospital after the shooting were the most emotionally challenging because, honestly, I had suicidal thoughts when I was in the hospital. I felt that horrible that Akira didn't make it. I felt that horrible that so many other people didn't make it, that I didn't feel like I deserved to live. So I was struggling with that internal conflict. And then you have family and friends that are saying they're so happy that you're okay. And you have moments inside where you're just like, okay, oh, thank God that I'm alive. And then it's just like this back and forth. Like as soon as you feel grateful, now you feel horrible that you feel grateful because there's so many other people that aren't here. And now you feel like crap. Like you feel like your whole existence is just, you know, not warranted. And it was a really hard time for me those first few days, and it didn't change until I spoke to Akira's mom in the hospital, and she told me, she said, that I shouldn't feel like it was my fault because any one of us would have went back in for the other. If I was stuck inside, Akira and Tiara would have came back in for me and vice versa the situation because I felt a lot of guilt about getting out of the club, here getting out of the club, and then suggested that we go back in together. At the time, I was feeling guilty because I thought Akira should have waited outside. I should have went back in because she was the youngest one at the time. She was only 18. So I just had to deal with a lot of things.
Of those who passed, right? She was the youngest of the 49 of those who had passed. I remember reading, right, too, and I can only, you know, I mean, you know, all the people reaching out to her family, I'm sure it must have been overwhelming for them, too.
And it's still overwhelming, in a sense, because they have to deal with that absence every single day. So.
Yeah. Where do you go from here? I mean, you have the book coming out. Do you think you'll, you know, travel a bit and tell your story, you know, to different groups around the country? Like, would you like to do that? Would you like to sort of, you know, just, you know, share that journey with people and in terms of, you know, how they can, you know, you overcoming this. I mean, I'm sure you have your tough days like anybody would, but you overcoming this, are you looking forward to sharing that with people as you get out there once the book comes out?
I would absolutely love to share what I've learned, not just my story, but everything I've learned about trauma assessment and just trauma competency, understanding how to deal with symptoms. And I would love to share that. I would absolutely love to share that. And it's just like at the same time, you have to take your time to make sure that you're okay. Because the one thing you don't want to do is re-traumatize yourself, you know? And I've learned that you can't put too much on your plate. And as much as I want to be this, like, you know, hey, I'm this inspirational, you know, person.
Mm-hmm.
I want
sure,
to
yeah.
through to everybody. I still have to deal with a lot of emotional things too. So, and that's what I talk about in the book, just like these lessons that I've learned. It's like gems that I picked up along the way from this entire journey that I've been on. And I feel like mm-hmm. I'm in a place where I can finally reflect back and be like, wow, I came a long way. Not to say that I'm where I need to be officially. I feel like nobody ever gets to that point, and that's the point of the book. That's why we share our story. That's why we share the gems that we pick up along the way to help people keep moving on to the next level, whatever that takes them. I feel like it's just an ongoing journey. It's never going to be like that final destination. Healing is super complex.
Absolutely. Well said. And do you also feel like, I think there was a quote I read, you said you don't have, there aren't any more nightmares. Is that, I mean, how did you feel when you got to that point that you don't, I mean, I'm sure you think about it from time to time, but you can sleep, you can rest, and it doesn't come to you in a haunting way? Did I interpret that correctly?
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing, and this is just something that I recently learned from studying. So I took some time, and I became a certified trauma professional, and I learned from the Arizona Trauma Institute that what that is, a flashback, a nightmare, night terror, those are intrusions from that traumatic experience coming back, trying to integrate itself into your memory. And the reason why you're not able to sleep peacefully, the reason why you're not able to get through the entire day without having a flashback is because you're resisting that healing process. Avoidance isn't healing. Pushing things to the back of your mind isn't healing because it's going to come back and it's going to intrude in your everyday life. And until you face your fears, until you deal with that trauma, it's always going to keep coming back. And honestly, and when I think about it in my situation, it makes total sense, because when I was waking up out of my sleep and extremely scared, extremely terrified, I literally had to tell myself, no more. I'm no longer going to go through this. I'm no longer going to let this experience control me. I'm no longer going to allow this person, this gunman who's not even on this earth, to still invoke this much fear into my life. You have to make a decision. You have to face it. And that's the only way.
Oh, it's incredible just hearing you say all that. And you know, everyone, of course, you know, in Philadelphia, over at the, you know, at Fox 29, I'm sure have just been, they've stayed in touch with you throughout this time. They've seen you grow and you know, just become so much stronger. I mean, you were incredibly strong that day when we saw you, you know, giving that, when the whole country saw you giving that poem, you know, and I wonder, do you... I guess I always think back to that moment because it was so raw, and you know, I just wondered what was kind of going through your mind too, you know, as you were in pain, physical pain, you were processing what had happened, but you seemed to give the whole country such a different understanding of not just what happened, but how right then and there you had the strength to say, this is not, I mean, obviously it's not going to define you, but it's not going to, you will rise above it. Like, I think people felt it right then, even in the aftermath, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is
yeah,
that something that you, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't intend for the poem to have that effect that it did on people. And that's why I honestly wanted to write the book, to talk about, because I also talk about in the book about how I encourage other people to share their stories. And not only, you know, in creative ways or whatever, but just sharing the story, because you never know how your journey can affect somebody else. And that poem wasn't supposed to be like this huge thing. It was just me writing my account in the best ways that I knew how in that moment, and that was creatively, because I wanted to make sure I got through my entire account. And if I didn't, I at least said the poem. That's what I was thinking. Didn't think that the poem was going to do what it did, but I'm glad it did. And at that time, it was just talking about that internal conflict that I told you earlier about,
mm-hmm.
feeling grateful and then feeling guilty for feeling grateful, and just going back and forth and reminiscing about everything that happened and trying to understand everything that happened and not believing everything that happened. And just it was definitely like a visual kind of, you know, symbolic way of showing all of my emotional internal conflicts that I was dealing with at the time, as well as the experience that I just went through. So.
Well, I'm so glad you've taken the time to share your story. I think, you know, with our listeners and you know, we're looking forward to the book coming out as well. It's Survive and Live, Trauma Survivor. Anything else you'd like to tell us just about the book, just about, you know, life today and, you know, your future plans?
So I'm getting married. Getting married this summer, and I'm super excited about just embarking on this whole new journey of just life and being happy and happiness. But that's just, and I just want to say this to say that there is life after tragedy. We have a strength inside of us that we don't even understand. We are literally more powerful than any circumstance that we could ever go through. And even the most pressure and pain can't unravel all of the magic that we have inside of our souls to keep us pushing forward, even in the worst times. So when I say I'm getting married and stuff, it's not just to boast about the fact that I'm getting married. It's just that I'm living, I'm pushing forward, I'm moving on, and so can you. You don't have to stay stuck in that place of pain. And when you understand that God has a purpose over your life, you begin to find peace. Knowing that there's a bigger plan for everything that you go through, it settles the fears that you have. But you have to believe that first. So, and the whole point of the book is to make this transition from being a victim and having this experience to utilizing that experience to be strong and encourage others to be strong too. So that's the transformational aspect of it. And survive and live. Lessons on how to leave. Sorry, survive. I'm getting emotional.
Oh.
Survive and live. Lessons on how to heal by trauma survivor. So that's it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, Patience Carter, thank you so much for everything you're doing. You know, thank you for, you know, taking the time to talk about all of this and to share the process of writing your book as well. Congratulations on your upcoming wedding too, and definitely stop the affiliate. You've got a lot of friends there, you know.
Awesome. And I hope you're following me on Instagram.
I am. I think
Carter.
so. Yeah, give us listen. Give us your Instagrams and your. I think I'm looking at your Twitter page at patience326 underscore. Right. Give us all
Yeah.
your social media so we can follow.
So follow me on Instagram at Tay Carter. It's PAECHARTER. And on Twitter, especially at PATIENCE326 underscore. So, and I
Awesome.
also have a website for my book. It's www.survivethenlive.com. And I'll be posting all the updates about any kind of book signings or, you know, all that stuff is going to be on there. So just follow me on everything.
Once again, Survive Then Live, Overcome Adversity and Live Without Fear is the book. Look for that. Many thanks again to Patience Carter for being here. And many thanks to you as well for listening to this program. And check out our other show again, Rock of Nations with Dave Kinchin, where we talk about music that brings us all together in the name of rock and roll. Have a great, great week or weekend, whenever you are listening to this podcast, of course. Thank you.